Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Missouri Grassroots Radio Network live on Monday night. It's the Hour of Truth, and here at the Hour of Truth, we have a mission. That mission is to vet for you, our listeners, all of the Republican candidates who will face off in a primary between now and the primary on August 7th. As you know, in Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we say that we make a difference. We make a difference at the primary election. Not at the general election. At the primary election, that's where we weed out the establishment Republicans from the grassroots candidates. Speaking of Republicans, it's not just grassroots Republicans that we're looking at. I'm excited to announce that next week, on June the 25th, 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a full program where we just sit down and have a chat with Cynthia Davis. That just came about today. Cynthia is running for lieutenant governor. We're also working on trying to get some other statewide candidates on, and we'll talk to them. That song that we opened the show with, I Am America, I like to put a plug in for that every once in a while. That is Krista Branch. That was the Herman Cain theme song. Krista Branch wrote that. If you don't remember Krista, she was on the American Idol. You can buy that song at iTunes for 99 cents. And if you like it, I'd suggest you go do it. I have it. I've shortened it, cut it, and it's my ringtone whenever any of my patriot friends call any of my cohorts from the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, like Lisa Payne Nager. She's here tonight. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing just fine, Dave. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks. How was your day?
It was just fine. It was a lovely summer day in St. Louis, hot and steamy.
Yeah, yeah.
How are things down in Springfield? Is the growing weather still good down there?
It's great. I cut and ate for supper my first garden tomato. That
we're
was
still
good.
Getting no rain up here, so we have no tomatoes yet.
Yeah, and we picked a mess of green beans on Saturday.
What?
So
you
yeah,
got...
we're growing good. We're growing good. The cucumbers aren't ready yet, and the flowers are doing fine. The gladiolas came out this week, and the dahlias are up. It's awfully early for them, but they'll all stay till frost, so that's fine with me if they come a little early. Well,
Paige, you have a beautiful.
Oh, I kind of like it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to talk a little bit in the National Minute tonight, Lisa, about what's happening in Wisconsin tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about what's happening there.
Well, it's the big runoff, the big recall election, and they are all of the predictions that I'm hearing is that it's going to go conservative. I hope it does. It's a kind of a bellwether issue, and a lot of people are saying that it's going to be a big predictor in what happens in November, and the polls are polling in our favor. So I'm there.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll be sitting on the edge of my seat all day until the polls close tomorrow night, and I'll be following that as the counts come in myself. In fact, we'll probably be on the air tomorrow when they call it. We'll keep tabs on that, and maybe we can bust in on Vaughn for a couple of seconds and give a recap on how that's going. That would be cool, kind of an election special. But yeah, it's the recall of Governor Scott Walker. He came into office really on a very close vote. I believe there was even, if I'm not mistaken, there was even a recount. That vote was close enough. And he immediately started doing what he promised he would do and started cutting some of the bloat out of the state's budget. The state was deficit spending. I guess they don't have a balanced budget requirement like we do in Missouri, or they don't follow it like we don't in Missouri. So they were in debt. He came in and as he promised, he started cutting some things out. And one of the first things he did was one of the most unpopular things that he did was he took away the requirement that public sector employees be forced to join the union and to pay union dues. Now,
it's my understanding that with that move, that there has been a huge shift in worker sentiment that people are running from the unions left and
right. 54% of the public sector employees since that measure have dropped out of the union. So more than half of those people who had previously been forced because it was a closed shop situation to be in the union and to pay union dues, given the option, have opted out of the union completely. So yes, that's a scary proposition for the union, and because it's a scary proposition for the union, it's a scary proposition for the Democratic Party, because a ton of that money that is collected in dues goes to the Democratic Party. So do you remember that vote in the legislature? It was really odd, because the Democrats, realizing that they couldn't filibuster this thing long enough and hard enough to keep it from passing, they just picked up and left town in hopes that there would not be a quorum available to pass this law. And there turns out there was, I guess, a quorum, and it got passed without them. And that was another big issue.
Yeah, and shameful behavior by elected leadership. Don't you agree?
I agree.
I mean, I would think that the people of Wisconsin should have been charging their state capitol, you know, demanding the ouster of those shameful elected leaders that behaved in that manner. I would have just been furious.
I would have.
If that had happened in Missouri, I would have been at the capitol doing just that.
Yep, and now, I mean, now of course they have all kinds of organized protests and things going on up there still yet with I don't know who's the Bowling for Columbine guy there, the
oh right, yeah,
yeah,
his name,
yeah, he's hip deep in that. And of course when that pig gets hip deep in something, the water level rises about 2 feet because
they have thrown at this. The left has thrown just this. This will be a referendum like no other if Walker wins this tomorrow.
It
because
will.
The big money that the unions have thrown at this campaign, and the answer that the right and conservatives have thrown back at them. This, I believe, this will be a huge referendum on the November election. Come November.
I do too. Between this and what's hopefully coming out of the Supreme Court here in another 2 to 3 weeks, I think. I think maybe the death blows. I'm hoping. I mean, I'm really hoping are the death blows to the socialist movement, or at least set them. I don't think anything will ever kill them. They'll stay around, but at least set them back for a little bit.
Yeah, and this should be a great confirmation of the Tea Party and grassroots movement. This like no other. Energized the Tea Party move, I think, if this goes off tomorrow like they're predicting, because this has been totally a grassroots movement. Individuals have been sending money to Walker all along. They're going up there tomorrow for the election. They've held rallies. They've just done everything. Not this this will have just moved, I think, the sentiment of the country. And I'll tell you what, if I was a rhino right now, I'd be shaking in my shoes.
I think so, yep.
This is absolutely, this sends a message to all government officials that the Tea Party is not dead, grassroots movement is not dead, and we are out there ready to strike if we need to. And we will. We'll go to the polls and we'll take care of business.
I think so, and I sure hope so. And again, ending the National Minute and just using that as a segue to roll right back into what we're doing here tonight, it is true that you've heard Lisa talk about rhinos. That's Republican in name only, R-I-N-O, for anyone who's who's not familiar with that. This primary, the primary election, the primary round is where we grassroots constitutional patriots make our inroads. This is where we actually say to our party, no more. No more of this get along. And you can't, I'm telling you, you talk about Wisconsin all you want to, you can talk about Washington, D.C. all you want to, but you can find no better example of what rhinos can give you than by looking at the last session of the Missouri legislature, hey?
That's absolutely right. And the last couple of sessions,
yeah.
You know, Republican-led legislature, House and Senate, you wouldn't know it. You absolutely
yep.
wouldn't know it by their actions.
That's right. Listen, listeners, we're here to take your calls, 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. Call in at will, and we'll get you on the air and hear what you have to say about this. But tonight, Lisa, we're going to talk about Missouri Senate seat 27, an interesting race between Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom. Excuse me. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this is, and let me say from the start that just like the episode we had 3 weeks ago, both of these candidates have refused to show tonight and talk with us. And so we're here again with 90 minutes to kill and nothing more to talk about on the agenda than Mr. Wayne Wallingford and Ms. Ellen Brandom. So that will be fun and interesting. I sent again, let me tell the listeners how we do this in case this is the first time you've tuned into the Hour of Truth. I send via the candidate's website contact me link an invitation. I tell them what we're doing. I tell them what our audience is. I tell them what night we are scheduled to vet their race. 3 weeks ago today, I sent out the first notice. I didn't hear anything back from them, and I tell them the rules. I tell them, and the rules are that there's no gotchas. I'll give them a list of the questions that we're going to ask them. We won't vary from that. We're not trying to trap anyone, but we want to talk with them. We want to find out what their rationale is, what they feel about their own voting record, if they have one, what they feel about the issues that are important to you grassroots listeners. So 3 weeks ago today, I sent out an invitation. 1 week ago today, not having heard back from any of them, I sent out the invitation. Why do we go to the website and use the contact me? Well, first of all, that makes it fair for everyone because there are some that I can't find a personal email address for, or even an email address for the campaign. There are some I can't find a phone number for the campaign. But they all have this contact me page on their generic looking websites. And secondly, if there is any one thing, Lisa, that these people ought to be reading, it is the mail that comes into the contact me on their campaign website, don't you think?
You'd think somebody would be reading it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's to it.
Yeah.
Kind of campaign contribution.
So yeah. Well, or a question from a would-be constituent. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know, how important are you to these candidates?
Right.
You know?
Well, I can understand. I'll understand if someone, especially, you know, the way the anti-incumbent sentiment is running in the grassroots movement now, if someone who has a record, quote unquote, writes and says, well, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I've got something else to do. Or even says, I'm sorry, I can't make it. That's not the kind of crowd I want to talk to. But to be utterly ignored by these people that want your vote, that's absolutely ridiculous and absolutely unacceptable. So we'll get on here and we'll tell you when that happens, and that happened twice. They not only wouldn't come, but they wouldn't even answer our invitation to come with a polite turndown. Now, I did call myself Wayne Wallingford's campaign headquarters today and talked with a guy who works for the guy who works for Wallingford, and he sent some bio information on Wayne Wallingford, but he made no apologies. He did verify the fact that they received this, and he made no apologies for not getting back to us. And so there we are. I am being as open about that as I can. And I sent another email today to Ellen Brandom, and I said, okay, you know, I sent you this thing 3 weeks ago. I sent you this thing a week ago, and we're either going to go on the air tonight and say you wouldn't even answer us back or that you refuse to come. So let me know which it is. And evidently she chose us to come on here and say that she hasn't even bothered to write us back and let us know that she will not come and talk to us and or why. So the interesting thing about this race, Lisa, and I know you'll love this, is and I really wish one or both of these would come talk to us, because I have some questions here as to what some motivations are. I have a Wayne Wallingford, a freshman House of Representatives member, and I have Ellen Brandom, that's Brandom for you who aren't in 27, a six-year House of Representatives member. Neither of them termed out. Ellen has one more round she could go in the House, and Wayne has three more terms he could go in the House, and yet both of them have abandoned the House to run against each other for this vacant Senate seat. Now, what could be going on there, Lisa?
Sounds like a power struggle to me. So do you know who's vacated the Senate seat? Or is this a newly redistricted Senate seat?
No, it's being vacated. And I actually did say that in the night you and I were running down what the upcoming schedule would be, which means that somewhere in this stack of papers in front of me, I have that. And here it is.
The Republicans go head-to-head intentionally. There's usually a little come to Jesus meeting, you know, behind closed doors about who's going to run what district, and usually, I mean, the Republicans generally have a policy of no primaries.
And look, Crowell is the guy vacating that seat, and he has termed out there, and he's already finished in the House. So his career, unless he would, and I haven't actually looked him up. I don't know if he may be running for something. So during the break, I'll go look that up and see if he's trying to stay in politics, or if he's just going to go back home and sell tractors or whatever it is that he did before. But anyway, Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom, and the thing that makes this interesting to me is, I mean, this is an all-or-nothing proposition. There is no Democrat in 27 filed for this seat. So the primary is the race. The one who wins this primary on August 7th is going to fill that seat in Jefferson City. There is no opposition in the November election. So one of them is going to win that seat on August 7th, and one of them is going to go home empty-handed without any job at all because they both abandoned their seat short of term limit in the House to try for this Senate seat. So it's very, very interesting to see what goes on there. And I don't – you say – like a power struggle, and that's entirely possible and likely. I mean, it's very likely that something along that line is going on there. I mean, I just don't know what it is, but the fact of the matter is that these two have voted so identically in the House of Representatives that it can't be I'm better than him or I'm better than her for this job kind of thing. I mean, they have both been very identical. Very party line, very pro whatever Tilly says, kind of thing in their votes in the House of Representatives. So I'm at a loss. I wish someone would come along and let us know what is going through these people's minds. Quite frankly, that it leaves us with the question, with only these two running, of is it just always bad when a career politician runs for another go? Is the career politician always the worst choice? If so, then you're pretty much screwed in the 27th, folks. And if not, then one of these career politicians, if it's a good thing, is going to be out of a job and not representing anyone. So I don't know what the strategy here, the political strategy is, and I'm just at a loss to go any farther than that. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and Lisa and I will banter a little bit about Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom, and we'll let you know where we're coming down on this thing.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it. I've got a feeling
that the tide is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
All right, Lisa and I are back, and we're going to talk for a minute about some of the things that went on in this last legislative session and how these two candidates that want your vote to move across the rotunda and into the Senate chamber came down on those things that are important to you. The other night we talked about HB 1103, Lisa, which allowed we talked about this on Friday at the roundtable for a moment, which allowed the government. If you and I and Mike and Vaughn buy a piece of property and put four houses on it, and there's a circular road that goes through that piece of property so that each of us has access to the highway along this road, and one or the other of us complains to the state that the road isn't being maintained properly, the state will come in and take over the maintenance of that road and send us all a bill. This is really Agenda 21 stuff, and as we've said, it is unfortunate that a lot of our politicians don't get Agenda 21, but it doesn't matter whether they get Agenda 21 or not. This is a state seizure, once again, of private property. I mean, if you and I and Vaughn and Mike can't come to some agreement on the maintenance of this road, it's private property, and either the three of us that want it maintained or the two of us that want it maintained are going to pay to maintain it and not get along with our neighbors very well, or we're going to let it fall into disrepair. It certainly is not a right of ours to go to the state and say, okay, come down here and make Mike and Vaughn pay for their share of us keeping up this road, don't you think?
I would totally agree with that. The whole Agenda 21, the property sustainable development, what's the word for it? I'll think of it in a minute, but the property issue, people are really need to get educated about what Agenda 21 is and how it is. Your rights are just being eroded right out from under your feet based on this property issue.
But
it's a frightening, and completely elusive experience. You do not know until it's too late.
That's right. I agree. And folks out there in 27, both of these individuals who want to be your next senator voted yay on this bill. They said that is perfectly all right. And these two Republican conservatives decided that it is perfectly all right for the state to come in and force maintenance of your road and then send you a bill for that maintenance.
Eminent domain. That's the word I was looking for.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Eminent domain. It's absolutely killing the rights of Americans on all levels. And it's, I know that in the St. Louis area, it's a huge issue on the very, very local level. We have some issues here in the township levels, you know, in the smaller communities. And it's not being publicized enough. And people are losing their property left and right over these issues. And
that's
having
right.
No reason to fight back.
That's right. And only recently, and when I say recently, as in the last 15 or 20 years, in the last 15 or 20 years, has it been that the gut now always, I mean, I remember when I was a little boy in kindergarten, we owned a house in Indianapolis, my parents, and my parents got a pretty fair price for the piece of property, I believe. When the government needed to build a highway or needed or wanted to build a highway there. And that has always been a eminent domain thing. The government could come along and give you a fair price. But lately, recently, as I say, within the last 15 years and a lot within the last 10 years, courts have held that a state can come in and take a piece of property from you and turn it over to another private entity so that they can economically develop. So Mr. Bigwig comes in here and he wants to put in a massive shopping center or something nice, a civic center, or a group of people want to build a ball stadium. The government can come in and force you to give up your property to make that happen.
Right. And people don't know how to fight it. It's like fighting City Hall.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
It's in their field. It's their rules and their field. And, you know, you don't have the deep pockets to be able to fight it.
That's right. And somewhere along the line, it seems that within our government, and this not only has to do with real property, but it has to do with money, I mean, as well. All property seems to have become joint ownership of the entire public. That is how far, I mean, when people sit back and say, oh, well, you know, we're not socialists, that is how far socialist we have gone. All of my money is considered public property when it comes to welfare and feeding people and housing people and buying people's medical care.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And yeah. it's not really your money. The government is in charge of how you live your life as far as the decisions that you make on your personal property and other things. Well,
that's right. That's right. And that was never, ever more apparent than the day that Barack Obama made the announcement that he had cut the budget by X number of dollars. And I forget what those X number of dollars were, but it was a monstrous lie. And then when you went and looked at the itemization of this budget cut, the money that the government lets us keep because we paid our mortgage or because we paid a hospital bill or because any number of things that the government has built in these ways to let us keep a little bit more of our money at the end of the year, the government calls these tax liabilities and says that because they let me keep a certain amount of money, that's a cost to them, and so when they cut one of these benefits, that's cutting the budget by making more income into the budget.
Yeah, and the fact that they can take part of your property in the interest of business expansion in your community, because it's better to bring business into your community, and then maybe turn around and give those same businesses tax increment financing.
Right. It is absolutely criminal, and so here we go. Both of these representatives think that's perfectly all right, and they both want to be your senator. Here we go with the rabies thing. Now let's give them a kudo. Let's give them a kudo because they both did the right thing on the rabies bill. They voted yes. Now I don't understand why this would happen like this. And again, I'm just a political idiot when it comes to things politics and how things work. But the Senate writes this bill, SB 566. You and I talked about it many, many weeks ago. And it was a bill that required you to go to your veterinary to get a rabies shot every year for any cat or any dog that you own. So you have two problems built into this legislation. First of all, if you live on a farm, you may well have a barn cat or a farm dog that has no other purpose in life but to run around and kill the varmints on your 600-acre farm. And it may be that you've never seen a need to get that dog that runs the fields eating possums or that cat that never leaves the barn because he's got all the food that he wants to eat right there in your barn and rids it of rats. You've never seen a need to get them a rabies shot because they are farm animals, and if they ever come down sick, you're just going to take a .22 out and shoot them anyway and replace them with something else. Or there's a guy like me who just goes down to Race Brothers, the local farm store, or even you can even get online and go to PetsMeds or someplace like that and buy a rabies vaccine and give it to your dog yourself for I'm less than a tenth of what it would cost you to go to the vet and do it. But now, you've got to take that barn cat, you've got to take that farm dog, you've got to take that dog that you've always given the shot to a vet now and pay the vet to give it a rabies shot and to certify that it's had a rabies shot. Now, that was the bill that came out of the Senate Bill 566. It went to the House of Representatives, and here's where I get politically ignorant, Lisa. Help me out here. Why the House of Representatives couldn't just say no?
Well, I'm just wondering if maybe there wasn't some kind of an agriculture lobby or a veterinary lobby attached to this bill. You know, it just reeks of extra regulation, you know. You know, how many people do you know? I mean, I would be one of them. If I knew that I could go to a farm store and buy a rabies vaccine and just give it to my dog myself, I already give her injections every month for hip dysplasia problems, I could give her a veterinary. I could give her a vaccine. It's not an issue. If I knew that the vaccine would cost me $4 or $5 to do it every year, and then you know, and save that money, you know, from having to take her to the vet.
Sure. Well, look that up online sometime, Lisa, because you can certainly buy it for just about exactly that. But anyway, so it goes over to the House of Representatives, and what the House of Representatives do, instead of just saying no, is they completely neutered this bill, which is good. And so now the final version of the bill, after they made the amendments, they sent it back to the Senate. The Senate said, we don't like these amendments. Go away. And make them go away, and they sent it back to the House, and the House said, no, it's these amendments or nothing. And it went back to the Senate, and the Senate finally signed it the way the House had amended it. And basically what the final bill says, because of the House of Representatives, says nothing about who has to give a rabies shot, and it says nothing about every animal has to have a rabies shot. But what it does say is that if your dog or cat bites someone, then you have to be able to show that dog has been vaccinated. And that's the extent of it. So there's no requirement to go to the vet and get a rabies shot. There's no requirement if you live on a farm to get a shot for your farm dog or your barn cat. But if that dog or cat bites someone, then you need to be able to show that cat or dog. And the penalty for not doing so is that your cat or dog would be confiscated and checked for rabies and then quite probably destroyed. But
how do they check a dog for rabies? Is it as simple as a blood test, or is there something else involved?
You know, I don't know. It might be as simple as a blood test nowadays. When I was a kid, I got bit by a dog when I was about 4, and they took the dog and they just kept it. They put it in isolation. Because there's a certain amount of days that, you know, the incubation period for rabies. So they keep it in the isolation. Say if rabies shows up in 14 days, they keep it in the isolation for 21 days. And if the dog doesn't come down with obvious symptoms of rabies, then they say it's not rabid. But that was the way they did it when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, you know, people were still drawing on cave walls. So I don't know what the... I don't know what's going on now. Speaking of people older than me, Lisa, let's diverge for a minute. Anyway, before we diverge for a minute, on the amendments, Amendment 1 and Amendment 2, which stripped this bill of any particular liberty-killing measures, both of our senators in question, or representatives in question, Wallingford and Branham, voted yes, passed the amendment, stripped this bill of any requirement for you to go to a vet and get a rabies shot. And then on the final passage of the bill, as amended, they also both voted yes. So there's a kudo for them there in doing the right thing on that bill, even though it still leaves a question in my mind as to why, if you're going to send an impotent bill back to the Senate, a bill that the House thought they had attached a poison pill to, why you wouldn't just say no to start with. Speaking of people that are older than me, Lisa, Neil Bortz has announced his retirement.
Who?
Neil Bortz.
Really?
Yeah, Neil Bortz is retiring in January, and he is giving the microphone over permanently on a day-to-day hosting basis to Herman Cain.
Oh, very good. I thought you were going to insinuate that I was older than you, Dave. But no. I'm happy to hear that Herman Cain is stepping behind a microphone. That's a much better answer.
It is. And no one who listens to that sultry voice of yours, Lisa, would ever think that you are a day older than my teenage daughter.
Very good. Good answer.
Okay. Moving right along. By the way, Wallingford has a ton of money. He received in the last quarter $61,000 in contributions, and I do not find a financial disclosure report at the Ethics Commission for Ms. Branham at all. So I don't know what the status is there. I'm going to continue researching that. I really only started working on this hard today. I've worked on this most of the day, and I did not find any kind of financial disclosure for Ellen Brandon. Wallingford has received quite a bit of money from some doctors in Cape Girardeau and some lawyers in Cape Girardeau, 10 grand each times five different individuals, I believe. He received a very large donation, I want to say 20K, from an outfit called YPYKYI Incorporated, which is, oh no, it was 10,000 from YPYKYA Incorporated, and that is a outfit that runs a bunch of fast food restaurants and dine-in restaurants in Southeast St. Louis and Southeast Missouri. So he's well financed. You can take no civil action now, Lisa, against someone who reports that you are suspected of or anticipating a fraudulent insurance act. So if you go out, and I'm against these kind of rules in general, rules that say some industry or some corporation can do anything to me or even law enforcement, and that I have no recourse against them, no matter what that is. It's the old what's the term they use now for a suspect who isn't really a suspect? Person of interest. It's the old person of interest thing. So you can go around now and really wreck a guy or woman by declaring them a person of interest, which they can be for 100 years, and never come out from under that cloud, and you have no recourse against them for that. And that is exactly, except it's not. Well, it is. It's a person of interest rule. That is exactly what House Bill 1495 is. It says that I have no course to take any civil action against anyone who reports that they suspect or anticipate that I'm going to perform a fraudulent insurance act. You know, that bill passed the House of Representatives unanimously.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Well,
not kidding a bit.
Because a few years ago, there was a slap bill that went through it went through the entire Missouri legislature, and it was very weakly support. It was supported. A slap lawsuit is along the same lines. You can file lawsuits against any public person. You know, you may or may not have criteria to do so. Puts that other person in. Well, Sarah Palin was a victim of this when she was the governor of Alaska. Lawsuits after her, and she was forced to defend herself, even though none of the lawsuits that were filed against her had any merit. So this sounds very similar to what you're discussing right there.
Exactly.
And it's a nuisance, and no one, this is why we need tort reform. There's no one in the legislature that wants to stand up to the judiciary and put the kiboshes on this and put some restraints on this, on the judicial branch of government.
Nope. So there, anyway, they both voted yes on that. So there's a no-no. There's a big black mark for both of them. However, let's get back to a nice, cool red check mark. House Bill 1342. Now that you've mentioned that, is loser pay tort reform. Now, loser pay, now this bill died in the Senate. I don't know what got into the Senate this year, but all of the good stuff that came out of the House of Representatives died in the Senate. The Obamacare nullification, the Sound Money Act, and this tort reform came flying out of the House of Representatives and landed in the Senate, and then all three of them just laid there and whimpered to death without ever getting even called up for a vote or even a debate. But anyway, loser pay tort reform is just that. It is probably the the most important and I think probably the most effective form of tort reform that goes, and that is, you don't tell me that I can't sue a doctor. Don't tell me that I can't sue a lawyer for malpractice. Don't tell me that I can't sue the A&P because I slipped and fell. But don't tell the A&P that it's more cost effective for them to pay me off because it's going to cost a ton to go to court. This loser pay tort reform is, yeah, you go sue the A&P if you want to, but you know, if you lose, you're going to pay their lawyer fees.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you know what? I don't share your opinion of the sound money and the Obama. I see those as Yankee Doodle legislation. But you may be right on this one with the tort reform. I have real big issues with how the judiciary is very unmonitored and unchecked. And it's the job of the legislature, the House of Representatives specifically, Article 7, Sections 1 and 2 state that it is their job to monitor the actions of the judiciary.
Yes.
So, and I would agree with you on this piece of legislation that, you know, that may not be Yankee Doodle legislation, and they definitely dropped the ball.
Right. But it's not, and it's not just the legislature on this thing. It's the trial attorneys out there who can take these nuisance lawsuits. I mean, Gloria Allred, for Christ's sake, who can take these nuisance lawsuits and just rack them up to where they're making big bucks. And as a general rule, if I sue my doctor or if I sue the A&P, if I win, I can almost always stick them with my attorney's bill. But if I lose as the plaintiff, they can almost never stick me with their attorney bill. So the defendant in these cases goes in with an already lost case. I mean, even if the defendant wins in a case, and this is where this sexual harassment thing, you know, killed Herman Cain. I mean, if you take one of these things to court, the defendant is going to lose even if he or she wins.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is probably an issue where we should have Vaughn on the air to help us with this.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to wonder, too, again, it's the judiciary. Oftentimes, the judge in these cases, more often than not, allows these cases to escalate, and they don't keep the attorneys in check in pursuing these salacious and fallacious lawsuits. The judge has control over what goes on in the classroom courtroom to a certain degree.
Well, true.
So you kind of have to wonder, you know, they've been allowed to run amok and nobody's watching them. Just exactly how much opportunity, that's the question, how much opportunity do judges have to keep a check on this, and they are not doing it.
Well, a lot, but this sort of tort reform, this loser pay thing, now this is going to do away with a lot of things that don't even ever get in front of a judge. I mean, this is going to do away with the feeling by the A&P or the doctor that they've got to settle this thing even if they don't feel they did anything wrong, just to keep from going to court.
Well, considering most of the legislature are attorneys.
Right.
They're not going to want to pass anything like that because, you know, the whole lawsuit industry, and it's an industry, you know, is going to take a big hit with legislation like this.
That's exactly right. And that tort reform measure did clear the House of Representatives, HB 1342, look it up, and both of our candidates tonight, Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom, voted yes to that bill and voted in favor of loser pay tort reform. So then that got over to the Senate and laid there on the desk beside the Obamacare nullification. By the way, Brandom voted yes on that and Wallingford was absent. And the Sound Money Act, both of which our subjects tonight voted yes on, those three items, loser pay tort reform, Sound Money Act, and Obamacare nullification, sat there and died without even a debate in the Senate. So there's some good ones. Okay, here comes one of your favorites, Lisa. They both voted in favor of the charter school reorganization, or the charter school, it wasn't really restructuring. SB 576, what do you think of that?
I'm not surprised. That one, I think that one went through pretty easily, you know.
Yep.
It's just, we could talk.
Just take 1 or 2 minutes and tell those who haven't listened to us before what's wrong with that.
Oh, where do I begin? Okay, charter school. Okay, charter schools are being sold as the next venue for education reform. The problem with charter schools, and I'm just going to be brief, is they are public schools, and they are required to operate under the same requirements and mandates as the regular public schools. For example, charter schools will be required to operate under Common Core standards, which have been adopted in Missouri. Part of all of Missouri public schools operate under Common Core standards. And what Common Core standards are is a nationalized curriculum. Most of the Department of Education will tell you that it's up to the individual school districts whether or not to adopt Common Core standards. And technically it is, but it's all about the assessments. You have to be able to pass the assessments to be able to advance, to go to college, all of those kinds of things. So if you don't adopt the curriculum, you can't pass the assessments to get your federal and state funding. So basically you have to adopt Common Core standards. All public schools are under Common Core standards. Charter schools will be under Common Core standards. So there won't be any difference between charter schools and public schools. Most of the legislators are jumping on this bandwagon, you know, rah-rah charter schools, because most people really believe charter schools are going to operate independently and autonomously, and they're absolutely not going to do that. It's another piece of Yankee Doodle legislation. The people don't understand it. They think it's a great thing, you know, when you're campaigning for an election year, you know, it's a great thing to get behind because it just looks good.
So basically, if I was to paraphrase all that, I would say that the charter schools are being sold to us as a great advancement in school choice, and that makes it look like the legislature is doing something about education because they're giving you a choice. But your choice is that the school is prettier, or it smells nicer, or the teachers talk sweeter, or the playground is better. And when you get right down to it's about education, stupid, there's no difference between a charter school and the public school down the street.
Right. Except for one thing, that it may be free from teachers' unions, which everybody understands. Teachers' unions have not been good for public education. But regardless, I mean, you're just going to trade the traditional teachers' unions for another kind of teachers' union. So...
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the teachers at the charter school are in a union or not, because teachers' unions aren't what brought us Common Core, and teachers' unions aren't what brought us Race to the Top, and teachers' unions aren't what brought us Race Left Behind or No Child Left Behind, and all three of those things are going to follow you from your public school into the charter school.
Yes, all three of those things are going to follow you from your public to your charters. Yes.
Right.
It's a little more complicated as to whether or not teachers' unions brought you these things. I mean, it's a very complicated web, and it's been going on for decades. But, you know, ending teachers' unions is a good thing, but is it the panacea for education reform? No, it is not.
Right. Well, I mean, and teachers' unions may have brought those things to your legislator, but your legislator brought them to you. I mean, teachers' unions could not force these on you at the point of a gun the way the legislature can.
Right.
Right. So both of our subjects tonight, Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom, they both thought this was perfectly A-OK, and they would like to continue with school reform, education reform, a la establishment next year as your senator in Missouri 27. I'm going to briefly touch on a couple or three things that I'm just going to lump into a special citizens. And I am against, I've talked about this before, and I know Lisa feels the same way as I do as a general rule, but even though she's not as libertarian as I am, but I am sickeningly opposed to any legislation which creates a separate class of citizens. Elder abuse laws, hate crime laws, don't beat a school teacher laws. I am against any law that says you can't go out and kill this specific person for this specific reason, or that you can't kill this specific person at all. Well, hell, you can't go out and kill anyone, Lisa.
Right.
So I mean, if it's against the law to kill people, then it's against the law to kill a gay person. If it's against the law to steal money from someone or to exercise undue influence to cheat someone out of money, then it's against the law to do that to an old person. If it's against the law to disturb the peace in front of my house, then it's against the law to disturb a peace in front of a church. And so we have this House of Worship Protection Act, we have this elder law, and we have both of these Senate. Now, this is where I would go along with you on the Yankee Doodle legislation right here. These are absolutely useless laws, and they're dangerous laws in my book, more so than Yankee Doodle, which are useless laws, which we shouldn't be paying our legislators money to waste time on, like the state butterfly and the state squid, the state fish. These are dangerous laws in that they set aside a class of people, and anything that sets aside a class of people is, in my book, a dangerous legislation.
Yeah.
They both voted yes, though, on voter ID.
Really?
Yes, they did. They both voted yes on requiring a photo ID to vote. A bill, House Bill 1104, that joined Obamacare, the Sound Money Act, and the Loser Pay Tort Reform in the trash can of the Senate. So maybe we've answered our question from when we started in the show as to why both of these people feel a burning fire inside them to get over in the Senate. Because all these good bills that make it through the House of Representatives are going over to the Senate and getting thrown in the trash can over there. And we're not even talking about the Senate having the guts to vote no and say, oh, we're not going to accept that. We're talking about a Senate that just takes these four bills that we've just mentioned and just leaves them on the table until they die.
But it doesn't make sense for a freshman representative and a senior representative to be fighting, to be, you know, running away from their district.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly, you know.
Running just one Senate seat, one, you know, usually one would stay and one would go because Republicans, you know, their policy is no primaries.
Right. That's yeah. I would still love to hear from somebody at 347-677-1835 as to what the political strategy is here, what the thought process is that went into this. If you're just joining us, we have a freshman representative and a 6-year representative who is eligible for one more run, who are both leaving the House of Representatives before their time is up to compete against one another for a Senate seat, for an open Senate seat. And
I'm not familiar with those House districts that they're each leaving, but it would be interesting to know who's filed with the Republican, who the Republican is who's filed to run in their district for the House seat.
I don't know the answer to that. Why don't you talk to people for a moment, and I'll go find out.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's talk about what we've got coming up this week on the rest of Missouri Grassroots Radio. Tomorrow night you have Von Carriker with Show Me Common Sense. Von does a great job interviewing individuals on individual issues across the state on her show. Von is an attorney, and she brings a great perspective to Missouri Grassroots Radio from the legal side of things. And on Wednesday evenings, you have me with Culture Vigilante. And this week, we will have Tom Martz, and we'll be talking a little bit more about legislation. And we will also have Brian Hook. He'll be back with us to talk about Missouri economics. And the ladies from Missouri Precinct Project, they have some interesting events coming up here in the next couple of weeks that they'll be talking about. And also some ladies, our ladies from Concerned Women for America. Great constitutional informative seminar going on a state tour across several cities across Missouri. So we'll be talking about that as we go through the hour on Wednesday evening. And Thursday night, Dave will be back with you with the Hour of Truth. And Friday night will be, I won't be here Friday night, but there will be another Missouri Grassroots Radio Roundtable with several Missouri Grassroots participants discussing the events of the week. Hopefully the win of Scott Walker in Wisconsin and other great relevant Missouri issues. So, Dave, are you back?
I am. In the 158, which is Senator or Representative Wallingford's district, we have Scott Fitzpatrick from Shell Knob, Mike Bennett from Purdy, and Frank Washburn from Monette. Now, it's just occurred to me then that given the fact that Wayne Wallingford is from Cape Girardeau, and we're looking at people from Shell Knob, Purdy, and Monette, it may be that he woke up the morning after the redistricting map was drawn and found himself in a different district, and if he wanted to rerun, he would have to run against someone. It'd be interesting to know what, I don't have a redistricting map in front of me, but I wonder that Cape Girardeau is no longer in 158, and that Wayne woke up in the morning and found himself in a different House district, and either didn't want to or didn't see much chance of winning if he ran against the sitting member in the district where he now lives.
Could be interesting. Could be an issue.
That's possible. So
two-way primary in that district, is that correct?
In this district here that we're talking about tonight, 27?
Uh-huh.
No, it's a two-way primary between...
For the House seat, in his old House
seat. For the House seat, yes, it's a three-way primary between Fitzpatrick, Bennett, and Washburn. There is going to be a Constitution candidate on the ballot, but there is going to be no Democrat on the ballot.
So maybe the heat was just too hot in the House seat. He's afraid of not being able to win that House seat.
Well, that's possible, but the distance, I mean, I'm thinking that it was a districting thing, because the distance between Monette and Cape Girardeau is significant. It's much more significant than a representative district. But anyway, let's go and look at who's, let's go and look at what's happened in Ellen's. She's in 160. She sits in 160 now. And in 160, there is one Republican running and no Democrat. So Bill Reibolt will be the representative from District 160.
So there was no primary in that district for the House seat. And she's a senior. She's 6 years in the House. And he is a challenging Republican for that House seat, challenging her.
Correct.
In her seat.
Correct.
She's supposed to run for Senate.
Now, let's go see. We'll be able now, then, to see if this is a... let's go to the House of Representatives now. And
so do we know anything about their challenge?
Okay, here we go. Bill Reibolt is a current sitting House member in District 130. So he is now running for a House seat in District 160, which means that that is a redistricting issue there.
Okay, so they got caught up in that issue.
And
how many terms has Reibolt served?
I don't know. Let's just go look. I just looked him up on the... He is on the Appropriations Committee, so he's been there a day or two. This will be his fourth. No, this will be his first. Sure. His first regular session was in 2011. His second regular session was in 2012. So this will be his third run at the House.
So I've got Reibolt as a freshman. He's served one term. Yes.
Well, right here I've got a 2011 and 2012 voting record on him here at the House of Representatives website.
Yes, he's a freshman. So he's just served his first term as a freshman.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. That's right. So he's served 2 years, and so he's got 6 years left.
Right.
You're right. Wow. Something's up with this guy. He's pulling some strings if he's a freshman and sitting on the Agriculture Appropriations Committee.
I bet he voted for the rabies bill.
Yeah, I bet he did too. I bet he's wow, he's sitting on the Ways and Means Committee as a freshman. He's sitting on the Agriculture Policy Committee. He's the vice chairman of the Agriculture Policy Committee. I can see if he and her woke up one morning in the same district that she would want to run away from that, because he's pulling some weight there. But I mean, she's had a 6 year run at it. I don't know. We're just going to have to, it only occurred to me late this afternoon when I was wading through these voting records that this was kind of odd to me.
Been going on across the state. A lot of that kind of thing happened here in Missouri, up here in St. Louis area too.
Right.
Where they put a couple of key Republicans in the same district, and you've either got people carpetbagging and moving to a new district or running for something else.
I mean, I know Jane Cunningham's no love of your life, but it cost her her job.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she'll do very well in the Republican Party.
Yeah. So anyway, just quickly breezing down here, they both voted for the Prescription Drug Monitoring Act. And, they both voted in favor of requiring the State Board of Education to establish rules that allow school boards to sell advertising on school buses.
Why are the legislators voting for something like that? Why isn't that an issue for the school board to decide?
Exactly. That's why I wrote that down, because that is just one of these overreaching government issues, in my opinion. I mean, why isn't the Springfield or Greater St. Louis, or I guess is it a Greater St. Louis? I don't know. How's it work there? Do each of the little suburbs have their own school district?
Well, each school board is supposed to be, running their own school district.
Right.
So they should be dictating how their money is spent and, where they get it from and how they generate it. So, other than getting their federal, and they should be also dictating whether or not they accept federal funding for programs, but they don't. And so, this is a situation, again, where the state legislature has got they're usurping their authority and stepping on the toes of your local control and trying to dictate, the school board should dictate on whether or not you have signs on the sides of your school buses or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I threw that one in there, because I absolutely agree with you. And then they both voted in favor of prohibiting insurance exchanges to be established by the executive branch, which was a definite anti-Obamacare issue, in my opinion, and was a very important and good vote. So, in a wrap on this, We're about 50-50 down there in the 27th, folks, with these guys. I mean, 50% of these votes are good votes if you're following this from a patriot constitutional point of view, and about 50% of them are darn bad votes. So it's a coin toss. The interesting thing about this race, as we've said before, is that both of these people, one of them a future senator, is coming out of the House of Representatives short of being term limited out, and both running for this Senate seat, and both have identical voting records in the House of Representatives. Both are Tilly yes people, and both are very big, grow government kind of people. And so you're pretty screwed down there in the 27th if you want the Dave opinion on it. But it's 50-50. And when I say it's 50-50, I say that by throwing in the caveat that if you are, as I am, a constitutionalist, a strict constitutionalist, then two bad votes undo about 10 good votes, in my opinion. If you vote the right way 10 times and then you vote to require me to go down and see a veterinarian to get a rabies shot or to have my prescriptions monitored by the government, or require me to have a prescription to buy Sudafed, then you've just undone 10 good votes.
I'm with you. It's not that hard. You know, it shouldn't be. It should be a no-brainer. It's not that hard to follow constitutional principles, especially if you're a career politician. You should know what constitutional principles are.
Yep, exactly. But don't say that too loud or we'll be stuck with the 50 ways to vote constitutionally song when Cynthia Davis comes along, and none of us want to hear that again. love you, Cynthia. That's the way that all goes in my book, and that's the way it breaks down in Missouri 27. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and in about 14 minutes, Lisa and I will do a wrap-up. Not in about 14 minutes from now, but in the 14 minutes we have left.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Jobs, taxes, traditional family values, education, protecting the unborn, Second Amendment, tort reform. These are the issues facing Missourians today. Hi, I'm Terry Varner. As your next state senator, I will continue to work to change government by preserving our liberties, reining in wasteful spending, and making the state of Missouri responsive to its citizens. I am a pro-life constitutionalist who believes our state and federal constitution are there for our protection from overreaching government. I firmly believe that only by ignoring those documents has the government at all levels been able to trample on the liberty of its people. I would appreciate your vote this August 7th. I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
All right, we're back. We've had a wrap tonight on the candidates who are running for Missouri 27, Wayne Wallingford and Ellen Brandom. We've talked about them. We haven't, unfortunately, for them, talked with them. I think it would have been great if any of them had come along and chosen to talk to us about why they do what they do or why they don't do what they don't do. and make an appeal to you for why you should take them from the House of Representatives and put them in the Missouri State Senate. But they chose not to, and so there we are. We talked about them, and we talked with you, and we'll let you make your choices there. I'm going to tell you that when it comes time for Dave to make the Dave endorsements, and understand when I say that, that nothing I say here on this show, nothing that Lisa says, should be in any way construed as the opinions of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition or of any of the other people who host these shows. They are my opinion when I say it and Lisa's opinion when she says it, and you're entitled to agree with that or not, and I've given you a phone number three or four times to call if you want to not agree with it or if you want to agree with it, and so you'll get your say, but by God, it's my show, and I get my say, too.
People don't really have to agree with us, Dave?
Nope. You don't have to agree with us. If you want to be right, you have to agree with us. But you're entitled to be wrong. This is America.
We could really solve a lot of things if,
So, did you tell us, or do you know yet what's coming up Wednesday night, Lisa?
Yeah, Wednesday night we've got Tom Martz and more Yankee Doodle legislation alerts.
Uh-huh.
And the ladies from the Missouri Precinct Project telling us about the latest activities that they're involved in and all the things that they've done in the past to bring registration to light in this very important election year.
Have you got someone coming along from MOP?
I'm sorry?
Have you got someone coming along from MOP?
I may have several people coming along from MOPs. We may be just having a MOPs party fest here on Culture
Great.
Of the Land.
Great.
Those ladies have worked really, really hard to get people to be aware of the importance of the vote, and they're going to talk a little bit about some events that they've got coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Great. Yeah, I like those people over there. Go ahead.
Yeah. And if you didn't know about it before, you'll know about it after Wednesday because there is a fabulous tour. We here at Missouri Grassroots Radio are all about promoting the Constitution, and the ladies at CWA that I know here in St. Louis have been doing a wonderful job of promoting the 5,000-year leap. And there's a fabulous seminar that they're putting on in several cities across the state of Missouri that they're going to talk about on Wednesday evening. And Brian Hook is going to wrap it up, I think. We're going to have a little bit of Missouri economics from him on Wednesday as well.
Gretchen coming along?
Gretchen and I are talking about doing some interesting things in the weeks to come. We want to kind of educate the people on some issues of the American Legislative Exchange Council. We're working on that an upcoming show.
Good. I don't know what Vaughn's got coming up tomorrow night. I haven't been able to talk to her yet, and she hasn't posted her schedule, so I'm not really sure what Vaughn's got coming up, but Vaughn Carricker on Tuesday nights doing the Show Me Common Sense Hour, where she actually goes down in the street and talks to conservative Missourians doing hardcore grassroots work. And when I say hardcore grassroots work, I'm not just talking about knocking on doors and selling political candidates. I'm talking about people who are involved in things like Veterans for Hope and moveonup.org, people who actually work with those folks in the streets. Because, listen, I don't care what the left tells you about how we as a corporate body of Americans need to be feeding people and housing people and medically taking care of people. Conservatives and constitutionalists are the most charitable people on the face of the earth. Look it up, research it, find out that it's true, because it is. I would much rather live in a place where 90% of all the folks were conservative constitutionalists than I would in a place where 90% of the people were socialists if I lost my job and was having to worry about whether my kids could eat tomorrow. Don't you think?
Oh, you betcha.
Absolutely.
I'm going that way, Dave. I think there's going to be a resurgence of constitutionally minded people in the next year or so, I think that there's going to be a groundswell of support for conservative values here. I think we've had enough.
I do too. And speaking of that, let me digress here for just one moment. We talked about this a bit on last Thursday night. But if you'll go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, you'll see a little blurb there about our Secret Santa. We did the Secret Santa last December. Now, Missouri Grassroots Coalition was only formed in the first week of December of last year. So understand that in the 3 weeks before Christmas, with only about 85 members in Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we gathered $250 together in donations for a Secret Santa project. We went to a local Walmart and a local Kmart, I believe. Terry actually did the footwork on this. And we found two families who had layaways on Christmas Eve that had not been paid off. So there's two families of children who we don't even know or care why. We don't even know or care why these kids were not going to have these toys on Christmas morning. All we knew was there was this layaway sitting there, and these toys were not going to be under that Christmas tree on Christmas morning because the layaway had money due on it. And we used that $250 to pay off those two layaways and stayed there while the manager of the store called the parent and said, okay, these layaways have been paid off. Come and get your stuff and take it home and put it under the Christmas tree. And it's great. It's great. Conservatives and constitutionalists, people who believe in personal liberty and personal responsibility above all, are the most charitable people in the world. Believe it and know it to be true, because personal responsibility means caring about what goes on around you. And so I say that to preface the idea that what we want to do this year with Secret Santa is we want to double that. I think that's an easily achievable goal. I think we may even be understating what we can do. We would like to double the amount of money so that we can double the amount of families we help. I think we could go 10 times $250 myself. But we're gonna make a reachable goal of doubling the amount of money, $500, and doubling the amount of families we help to four. We're not as much in a time crunch this year, so we'll spread it out around the state a little bit more than we did last year. If you'd like, and we're starting this thing in June, because Lisa, you know that the worst time I can come to you begging for money is in the first 3 weeks of December.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know what? If history proves itself right, conservatives and grassroots folks are the most generous and philanthropic folks there are. I think that we'll do a great job with this Secret Santa project. It's a great cause. It's a great Christmas feel good thing to do. And if you just look back in history, grassroots people rise to the occasion every single time. I think we'll have a great response with this.
Yes, I do too. So we're starting in June so that you folks can give a little bit either now or in August or a little bit a month, or, you know, it would be great. I mean, if you're conservative, if you're into personal responsibility and fiscal responsibility, and you want to teach this to your children, and you give them a $20 a week allowance, it would be great for you to sit them down, explain to them that there's a lot of kids in the world who not only don't get $20 allowance, but who aren't going to have anything for Christmas, and see if they wouldn't like to maybe throw in 50 cents or a dollar per allowance and teach them what it's like, because we want the next generation of conservative, constitutional, personal responsibility Americans to be as giving and as feeling and as charitable as we are today. So that's it. We're starting this thing in June. If you can give, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check the donate button. It'll take you right to PayPal where you can donate the money. Or you can go straight to PayPal and just donate to Santa at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. There's a PayPal account set up. 100%. There's no overhead here. None of us get a salary for anything we do here. None of us get paid. There's no, we don't pay for the gas when we drive to the Walmart or Kmart. We don't pay for anybody's dinner. We don't do anything but take 100% of this and put it toward these things. And we will find layaways. We will find donations at Christmas time that use up 100% of this money if we have to. There won't be $5. There won't be 50 cents left in this account on December 26th, because if we have to reach into our pockets and take out $3 or $4 to make it come out even and use up every penny of that money, we will do that. Every bit of that money will be used for what we say it's going to be used for. So I digressed there a little bit. I don't know what Vaughn's coming up with tomorrow night. On Thursday, we'll be back with the Hour of Truth. We're going to do a legislative district number 29 next. 29 is we're going to spend the next two sessions on 29. It's a four-way primary between James Strahan, Gail Ridge, David Sater, and Jim Strafus. I have heard from two of them that they will, in fact, join. So we will have some questions, and we will actually talk to Senate candidates. The next roundtable, I believe, now Lisa's not going to be here, so I really don't know what we'll topic that on. I'll get that out there tomorrow. That's going to be about what we have coming this week. We're very excited. Remember, folks, if you have to catch this especially, you may have just tuned in 25 minutes ago because you thought we were coming on at 8. If so, go back and catch the podcast, and you'll hear the whole thing. Or if you come along on the podcast because you had something you had to do tonight, remember that beginning tonight and forevermore in the future, Missouri Grassroots Radio Network has moved to this new time slot. We start at 7. The reason for that is because we're expanding. We're adding on some stuff. We're adding on in the very near future a hour a week of education on Agenda 21. I am incredibly excited about that. We have an expert coming along to co-host with me on that show, and it'll be kind of a bantering session between me, a person who's totally ignorant on what Agenda 21 is, and an absolute expert on Agenda 21. And so he will educate you as he's educating me on Agenda 21, what it is, what all the complex issues are, where it comes from, and how it is creeping into your very state and city and school government. So in order to make that happen, we don't want these shows to be going on till 10 or 10:30 every night. So we've moved the time slot up till 7 so that even on those nights where we have a second hour, we'll be done by 9 o'clock. And get you back out in the living room in time for the ninth inning at least. So that's where we're headed. We've talked about Secret Santa. We've done our mission for tonight. Thank you very much, Lisa, for coming along. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Dave.
Sorry, I won't be there Wednesday night. I'll look forward to hearing that podcast, though. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, we'll miss you, but hit a home run for us.
I don't know that I'm an old man. I don't know that I hit any more home runs, but I'll slap one or two of them out of the infield at least.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon, Lisa. For all of you listeners, thank you very much for tuning into Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, The Hour of Truth, and we'll talk to you Thursday night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.